Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, exploring topics to help you find the pieces that fit into your health puzzle.
I think from a mental health perspective with that, I think small steps. You know, you don't have to take the whole box, or even if you're not in this program and working on eating healthier, you don't have to make this huge commitment to 100% eating only fruits and vegetables, or making just small steps, not setting yourself up for failure by overshooting. Mm-hmm. We humans, again, the condition of being human, we do that. We set ourselves up, you know, we try to like climb Mount Everest before we've like walked down the block.
Right.
And so I think applying that strategy to making changes in your health and your diet, small steps. What I can't do this, but what can I do?
What are some ideas of how to make this? Is this something you would eat raw? Is it something you would cook? Would you roast it? Would you put it in a soup? Kind of those general, like, how do you approach this food?
Yeah.
And then storage, you know, so like sometimes they're getting 12 items or 14 items in a box, and that's a lot. Like you have to be a passionate veggie eater to get through those in a couple days. And so we also talk about strategies, like what do you want to eat first before it spoils? So they're getting really the most mileage out of that share in terms of duration of food that they can eat. And then what are some items that they could wait a couple weeks if they needed it, or keep in storage? And so kind of make a plan about eating.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening. This is Judy with Wellness Renaissance and the Wellness Renaissance Podcast. You just heard two voices, both from North Lakes Community Clinic. And the first one was Leslie Berg. She is a mental health therapist. And Sarah Tarkington, who is the wellness manager at North Lakes. I want to take a quick minute and just talk about the concept of community health center. So North Lakes Community Health Clinic, it's a nonprofit organization. They have a patient majority board of directors, and it really is about the community, right? The goal is to improve the health of the community. And so there is a focus not only on, of course, helping people who are sick, but also looking at the preventative side of things. They take all insurances and also help people who don't have insurance as well to get the care they need. North Lakes has 12 clinics that are in various locations across northern Wisconsin. North Lakes Community Clinic themselves do everything. They do, well, not everything, but they do medical and chiropractic and dental and occupational, speech therapy, a bunch of other stuff. We were at their Washburn Clinic, and it was a super cool clinic. It's a house converted into the behavioral health clinic there. And I just love the concept of going into this homey space, sitting down, you know, you're getting your therapies on in kind of this comfy little room, right? That feels very homey. It creates a very different experience. Not that I've been there and used their clinic, but I can imagine from other experiences in my life, it creates a different experience, and being able to talk to people and just having that feeling of hominess. So the thinking outside the box creativity. So I got together with these ladies to talk about the Farm to Patient program. And I have been excited about this program for a long time. So it was great that we were finally able to make it come together and have them as guests to talk about it. I learned about the program because I knew somebody who benefited from it, and I was just really impressed with what they were getting, both food and information. And I wanted to share that. This is a clinic that is thinking much more holistically about their patients. It isn't just, you know, walk in the door, let us give you services, let us send you a bill and move on. It's how do we help the people have better health, wellness? What do they need? They need access to food. They need healthier options. Let's figure out how to do that. And if you listen to this, you'll find out that they've done it in many, many ways. It is not just, here's your CSA box, have a nice day. There's a lot of other programs that they've put into place that benefit not only the CSA members, but other people around in the clinic and beyond, quite frankly. So I'm really excited to be able to share this with you guys. We've been working on getting together for a long time, and I want to share this not only as an example of great things that are going on, but also an inspiration, perhaps, of if you're in a helping position anywhere in the country or world, there's some great ideas that you might utilize or modify for whoever it is that you might be working with or supporting. And if you happen to be a person who eats food, there's a ton of things you can grab from here as well to help support yourself in making things easier for you, your family, etc. Before we dive in, I just want to say hats off to North Lakes Community Clinic for thinking about their patients holistically, for investing the money and the time in doing this program and thinking and working across departments within their clinic to make it work. And having the dedication to figure out how to make it work instead of saying it's too big and too complicated, which could be a really easy answer with the amount of things they have to coordinate. A couple of housekeeping things. You'll hear us laughing a little bit about the weather. We recorded this on a very, very snowy day in March in Washburn, Wisconsin. So talking about summer and fresh vegetables is a very lovely break, but it was a little ironic sitting there watching the snow just keep falling outside. And lastly, just to give you some context, Leslie had to get up and go to an appointment in the midst of our interview. So she kind of drops off and we say goodbye to her in the middle. Without further ado, please enjoy our conversation. I'm here with Sarah and Leslie, and we're going to talk about the North Lakes Clinic in Wisconsin has a really neat program called Farm to Patient, and I'm going to have you guys introduce yourselves and describe the program, and we'll start there.
I'm Leslie Berg. I'm a mental health therapist with North Lakes Clinic, and I utilize the program a lot for clients that I can see kind of benefiting from it. And as we talk more about that, I'll explain that a little bit more.
I'm Sarah, and I am the wellness manager for North Lakes Community Clinic. For the whole organization, and Farm to Patient is one of the wellness programs targeted at patients that I manage for the organization.
Okay, perfect. So Farm to Patient, so let's describe like what goes on in that program.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Farm to Patient is designed as a program to connect our patient population that has a financial barrier to accessing enough fresh fruits and vegetables, so enough healthy items in their diet, and also has a chronic condition, a health condition that they're working to manage that can benefit from the addition of more healthy fresh fruits and vegetables in their diet. And so it's about partnering that targeted patient population with this like really beautiful nutrient dense food that we are able to purchase from local farm partners. We're now up to 12 clinic communities. And so we partner with farms that are local and regional to those specific communities that are growing food in sustainable ways. So we're also working on supporting the health of those communities economically and also environmentally. So it's kind of a multi-pronged approach because we're looking at the community wellness aspect of financially supporting and partnering with those local businesses, and then also what that product can do to help support the health and wellness of our patients.
Right. Very local.
Yes.
Keeping it right there in the community, right?
Exactly.
And you're in mostly like rural communities where people are spread out as well. So how much, when you're talking about kind of the financial barrier, is it also sometimes, obviously you have to be able to get to the store,
right,
or the farmer's market.
Right.
So is that part of kind of the piece of it too, that's the challenge for the patient? I can imagine if somebody has a chronic condition, that getting there can be a challenge as well, getting to the store or farmer's market.
Yes, that's true. So in general, we're a community health clinic. So we are in communities that are underserved in some capacity. And so kind of our bigger mission is to provide services in our communities that those services are needed. So there's already an established need for those services. So we have a large array of health services that we provide, but we provide them targeted to what that community needs. And so we are now in almost kind of the whole top third of Wisconsin.
Okay.
But in general, all of those communities do have similar characteristics. And so in general, they are all rural and they're usually very small communities or kind of a chain or group of small communities. And so distance is a large barrier for a lot of our patients. And I think, you know, just to mention too, a chronic condition that benefits from more healthy fruits and vegetables is like being human.
It's like a chronic condition, man.
It's like
in my chronic condition. It is, so it covers a huge swath of different conditions that we're targeting. So it's not just physical and medical, and Leslie will speak more into that. It's, you know, that mental health component. It's working with children and even kids that are working on some developmental milestones and, you know, working on expanding their palate. So anyway, just kind of to broaden that scope, the rural nature of communities, and in most communities that we're in, a lot of our families and patients come from agricultural backgrounds or like homesteading backgrounds, and they either had gardens or can remember that their grandparents had gardens, but they themselves don't have access to that food anymore. Okay. And so it's kind of an interesting educational component, because a lot of them are somewhat familiar with a lot of what's in the shares, but they're just not able to get to it anymore. So one of the big pieces of rural food deserts, which is an area that doesn't have enough access, enough stores that are affordable, that are close and convenient for people to get to kind of meet the needs of their nutrition. Mm-hmm. And in rural communities, what ends up happening is, on average, people are usually like 2 miles away from a grocery store, which doesn't sound like that far, but if you have limited mobility, if you don't have a vehicle, that can be a really big barrier for folks. And in urban centers, it's usually like a quarter mile distance to a big chain grocery store. So it's a big difference. That's, you know, 8 times more spread out. And then typically those stores that are available are those like convenience store options. And the selection is way worse for nutritional foods in general, much more processed foods. And the price point of those foods is a lot higher. And so not only are there less nutritional foods there, but the ones that are there tend to cost a lot more. And so they're far away, they're more expensive, and the selection is poor. All of those kind of create this perfect storm of people being kind of undernourished, really, essentially, in their daily diet, even if they're getting enough calories. And so we're in this area where we do have a lot of farms. And so now it's about trying to make that bridge and that connection between getting those healthy local foods to the patients that need them.
Right. And more local equals more nutrient rich.
Right. Yeah.
Which the stores do not so
always have. Yeah, exactly.
Right. And you're living in an area where you can't just call an Uber.
No.
You know?
No.
It's not an option.
No, you can, and you will be waiting a very long time.
So I want to make sure, because I know, Leslie, you have a limited time. So let's dive into, and I want to get back to like what's in the share and how does the program work in detail. But let's talk about the mental health aspect, because I think some people might be listening to you going, well, this is interesting. You have a mental health person coming to talk about your farm to patient, which I love. I think that's fantastic.
Oh, I think it fits so well with mental health. I mean, there's so much research on literally like how certain foods or certain types of foods impact specific things, like gluten intolerance can cause, you know, depression, anxiety, like all the fatigue, all this kind of mental health realm symptoms that can be very directly connected to food. What I have seen in working with my clients and connecting them with this program, it is so much broader than that as well. For mental health, part of it is having a healthy foundation so that you can then engage with your mental health as effectively as possible. And so if someone is depleted of nutrients, of whatever that means, you know, I don't know that, I'm not medical, but if they're not having a healthy diet, their body isn't functioning, isn't engaging as well as it could. And so then it's more difficult to then ask them, okay, take care of your mental health. You know, go exercise and do these coping skills. And it's that much more difficult to engage. So if someone has a healthy diet, their body is going to be more effective at being like, okay, I can practice deep breathing and I can go for a walk. And so it's really an interwoven and it all impacts everything. So there's very specific ways it can impact, but I really approach it in a more general sense of like getting yourself as healthy as you can so that you can be more effective in managing your mental health. So there's sort of that general idea. And then it keeps going even further than that. Sarah has the setup where people go in and they talk to her and they talk to the other people coming in. and they interact. And a very important part of mental health is social support, social connection, mm-hmm. resources. And so not only do you get that kind of individual one-on-one connection, like with Sarah or with other participants of the program, but also that connection with the resource of like, hey, there's a place here that's caring about me and that's helpful and gets people out of the house, mm-hmm. so there's less isolation, which is also, again, a very big component of mental health. Mm-hmm. And so that is an important aspect for the mental health piece. And again, it just is so broad reaching and it all interacts. Then Sarah talks with my clients or other patients of North Lakes about, you know, you could try cooking this food like this and hey, here's this recipe. So then that person goes home and they chop up vegetables and they make themselves a dinner. And that is a very important process for mental well-being. You know, it on the surface, it might seem like, oh, just make dinner. Mm-hmm. But actually, the process of cooking for yourself and taking care of yourself and engaging mm-hmm. is beneficial for depression, for anxiety, for creating a kind of vitality in your life. And it's all these small pieces added together that really make a big impact on someone's overall mental well-being. So I am a huge supporter of the program. I think it's wonderful. And another piece I see for my clients is a lot of people want to eat healthy, but financially, you know, you kind of have to make choices. Like, okay, I can be hungry and eat a little healthy, mm-hmm. but not get enough food.
Right.
Or I can buy these things that aren't as nutrient-rich, but I get to have enough food. And some relief of that financial burden, again, by supporting people, by having resources, by having support out there in the community, you're taking a little bit of pressure off and giving a little bit more breathing room so people, again, can engage in their mental well-being more effectively.
Right, kind of hitting some of those sort of lower hierarchy of needs, the mm-hmm. whole, if your body isn't nourished, yeah. there's all this other stuff going on.
Yes, exactly.
Right. And like yeah. you say, the social, I mean, I love the kind of holistic mindset that this is taking to people. Like you're saying, even the social aspect is being thought about in this, but reaching out. And I think we, the general, appreciate mm-hmm. seeing medical establishments go a little bit outside and do something different to say, no, we do care. This isn't just about you coming in and mm-hmm. getting the blood tests and, you know, paying your fees. Yep. This is about wellness in the community.
Absolutely.
And really investing in the people. And if people seeing that, it's that reminder that we're all here. You guys are here for a reason. And it is about the community.
Yeah, about the community and about that individual in right. a wholeness, or like in a whole sense, this person
the
is
whole
a whole person.
Model.
Yeah. Isn't just like, okay, yep, here's your test, see ya.
Right, exactly.
You're a whole person with lots of interwoven aspects, and we want to broaden our definition of caring for the community and, yeah, treating that whole person.
So you're working with a patient, and you see that, hey, this is something that could really benefit, mm-hmm. then you're able to speak to the patient or to you or whoever to say, this is, you know, is this something you can utilize, or, you know, checking in with them? And then sending them forward to help getting them involved?
Yeah, so what I typically do is when I kind of see that, like, oh, hey, I think this would be a good fit, I introduce it to the client and see if they're interested. If they are, I get in touch with Sarah and...
We have an application
okay.
That the patient fills out some of their information, but usually after it's been introduced by their provider, so in this case with Leslie in one of their sessions, mm-hmm. and then either collaboratively work on that application with the patient. We also have some other positions in clinic called our resource coordinators that help folks if they need assistance in actually like filling out the form if they have some literacy issues. And then on that form is also a provider recommendation piece where then she signs off to say, this is my patient. This is just like a brief statement about why I think they would benefit from the program.
Okay.
And then she passes that along to me.
And it's been really nice working closely with Sarah because, yep, there's this application and so it's kind of a form. But then being able to say like, hey, Sarah, I think this person would be great for this program. I think it'd be helpful if you reached out. I think it would help them come into this program
yeah.
a little bit more. just having that relationship too, so that we can be as helpful for each individual.
Yeah, it's a kind of individualize a little bit. We're always, as an organization, working on integrating care. Mm-hmm. So again, kind of what Leslie was speaking to about that whole person model, even though she is not just a behavioral health therapist, you know, in this clinic, that's the service that we offer, but a lot of our patients also need medical or also need other services. And so being able to help create that referral system and, you know, seamlessly get them in without that stress of them trying to navigate it themselves.
Right.
Particularly with behavioral health clients, you know, some of them are working on socialization goals or, you know, engagement goals. And so they're not always the people that you just send home with a form and they're like going to call me in 5 minutes. And so having that information from Leslie is really helpful in helping me approach them in a way that feels like safe and supportive for them to then start to participate in the program. Mm-hmm. So it's not just like, who's calling me from where and
right.
what?
So right. Again, very individualized within this process, within this kind of idea. And trying to make it fit for this person and how all of those people make up this whole of this program.
And that, does that kind of look like what ends up in their share or what other tools they need to make better use of, the best use of that share?
Yeah, you can probably speak more to that when you, yeah.
Yeah, so when I introduce the program to patients, so again, I'll receive that application and then I will follow up with the patient. We do have a waiting list in most of our clinics, so if they're on the waiting list, I at least reach out and notify them or the provider that they're on the waiting list, and if a spot becomes available, I'll give them more information. But I follow up with them, and usually over the phone or in person, if I happen to be in that clinic when it's coming up with a patient, I'll give them kind of the big overview of the program. So usually the provider will introduce what's happening from the program perspective, and then I will add that second layer to just kind of give them the big picture of what it looks like. And again, just kind of try to figure out if it's a good fit for them. Mm-hmm. Of course, this doesn't fit for everyone. And,
sure.
You know, mostly I want people that are excited to get it because that's the most successful for all of us involved.
Right.
And so I'll just kind of give them more details and then just check in again to see, like, is this something you actually want to participate in? Is there a barrier? Like, are you really excited, but maybe you have really limited transportation or you rely on someone? And so if that comes up, then we know that's an issue for that patient and we can reach out to some other layers in our organization to see if we can kind of meet that need and still get them in the program. We have a position called resource coordinators, and they're really there to connect patients to services and identify barriers to their whole care. So, you know, maybe that person can come in and help us troubleshoot how to get that patient to the pickup. And then I do talk to them about how this is an adventure in eating, and they typically can't pick out what's in the share. So for most of our farm partners, at the volume we're purchasing from them, they're not customized shares to each patient, and that is somewhat intentional as well to help expose those patients to a variety of vegetables. And to Leslie's point earlier, there is that piece where when you take that pressure, that financial pressure off, people are so much more willing to experiment. They're really hesitant to spend money that's really limited for them on something that they are not sure they might like.
Mm-hmm.
So getting it at a super reduced cost or for free, you know, they're more willing to throw some stuff in soups or stews and see if they like it, see if they can hide it for the kids. And they haven't, that money's not coming out of the heating bill to support trying turnips.
Right, exactly.
Like, and so we talk about that piece. So it's not, you know, there are a few patients that have food allergies or restrictions in that way, and I do work on a personal level with them.
Okay. In the mental health aspect of it, have you had experiences where you've been able to really see this working for people or see them kind of really be affected or excited or expand their...
Yes,
their palate.
Absolutely. One of an important part of mental health is feeling like you matter, that you as a person, every human being needs support. Every human being needs compassion. Every human being needs to be heard and understood. And so having people go talk to Sarah, get this food, come back and just be so grateful for the multiple aspects of it, the financial burden kind of lifting a little bit. The good interactions with Sarah, like, oh, I gave Sarah a recipe, you know, like, I was talking to someone else, another participant while I was there, and we were trading recipes or stuff like that. Coming back and having that feedback, to me, really shows, like, hey, I feel like I matter, and I'm grateful for that. You know, we're doing it in this program with food.
Right.
But that is sort of the base of it for a lot of people. And so absolutely. And then again, like I was talking about earlier, like, oh yeah, I cooked dinner. I cooked myself dinner 3 times this week. Like, oh my gosh, that's awesome. That person maybe hadn't cooked for themselves hardly at all. Mm-hmm. And they like feel proud and feel accomplished. Or, you know, I cooked this rather than sitting on my couch just full of anxiety and spending my time that way. I was so anxious, I don't like live my life. Mm-hmm. But hey, they're out there living their life, whether they have depression or anxiety or other things getting in the way.
Right.
So I see it in very kind of concrete things like, yep, I cooked 3 times this week. I even froze some soup so then I can use it later. So very concrete stuff like that.
And those are big wins in when you're trying to shift, and you know, or if you've gotten out of the habit, or like you say, you used to have this food, but you don't now, and now you do, and mm-hmm. getting into the, how do I do this? And oh, wow, steaming vegetables is really pretty easy. I can do that. Mm-hmm. And having, like you said, those successes, mm-hmm. Those little wins are pretty big.
Right, exactly. And they all contribute. They are bigger than they maybe seem mm-hmm. because they all are pieces of full and meaningful life, a kind of a quality life.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And self, being able to do it for yourself, mm-hmm. you know, instead of pulling the meal out of the freezer and throwing it into the oven. Yeah. I made this, or I tried this new thing.
Yeah.
And it was good.
And it was good. Yeah. Feeling accomplished and getting good nutrients yeah. and feeling proud of yourself. And right. yeah, right. absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it's an empowering program. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, to Leslie's point about it's food and that's a foundation, but kind of that bigger picture is really empowering, and all those wins are a cumulative effect. Like, I got out of the house, I made mm-hmm. it to my appointment, I saw other people, mm-hmm. I cooked myself a meal. Like, that's just in a couple hours, and that checks so many boxes that mm-hmm. all of us sometimes struggle on certain days yes. to mm-hmm. get all of that accomplished. Yes. And then that just engenders confidence to go do the next thing and the next thing, you know. So
yeah, and what I like about it is that, again, the very individualized, that also then supports this whole community. I see the individual client come back and say, like, you know, I cooked 3 times and Sarah gave me this new recipe. And, you know, I see that individual and the benefits in that person's life. But then that person is one of however many people are participating in this program. And so not only is there that improvement for one individual, but then it's this really nice big community, like, hey, we're impacting this group in a really positive way.
And like ripple effects.
Yes.
I can imagine, yeah, happening in the whole, oh, wow, look what I made. And then, you know, passing that on and sharing that. And it is exciting. I teach pre-diabetes classes, and I've certainly had some folks in my classes who it is the excitement of getting a steamer mm-hmm. and going, oh, wow, steamed broccoli with a little bit of butter and a little bit of seasoning on top. Oh, really good. And yeah. then they go share that with other people. Oh, really? You know, and it's like, it's one of those things that seems simple, but if you've either gotten out of the habit or you just haven't done it for yourself, or you're newly a single person cooking for yourself, these are huge and big things.
I like what you said about the ripple effect too, especially in terms of kids.
I yeah. think
then it just really goes with that ripple effect.
Yeah, I'll have patients that there's certain food items that they themselves will not try anymore as parents. You know, maybe they're 45 and they've just decided, like,
Brussels sprouts are
yeah,
just
they're
not
just not for me. But they'll still cook them for their kids, and the kids will love them. And so it's really awesome to see that win, you know, even within generations. And and you know, occasionally that like little bit of pressure back from the kids also, you know, widens the adult's palate. But even if they are kind of a little bit more rooted in their habits, they're still willing to open the door for their kids. And I have so many parents that report, like, what their kids love in the share is kind of an unexpected vegetable, you know, or they'll eat them raw, or they just get so excited about cooking because they come to the pickup, they get to see what it is, they get to hear about it, and then they're like really excited to go home and be part of that preparing of the meal. Mm-hmm. And then because they made it, they will eat it. Mm-hmm. And it may not be that tasty. You know, as a kid, I remember making some really interesting items, but like you made it, so you're gonna eat it. And so that's like, I see that.
And then often that bonding time with their parents.
Yeah.
Being involved in the kitchen, cooking together. Again, just all these like valuable parts that just keep going.
Right. Yeah. And that's a big thing for kids. I mean, and sometimes it takes some consistent gentle encouragement or non-encouragement, but just allowing the involvement for them to like gain that interest. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if they can be a part of it and see it, you know I shop at a grocery store where I love watching the parents involve their kids. And they're like, you know, oh, you go over there and pick out your this type of vegetable, or, well, which one of these three vegetables do you want to have for supper? You know, mm-hmm. And I just think that it's so fun to watch the kids be excited and feel like they have some sort of input, mm-hmm. You know.
And that their parents are listening to
exactly.
them. And accepting them and involving them.
Yeah. And, mm-hmm. And I give parents so much credit if they're not eating a particular food, but they keep that door open for their kid.
Yes.
That encouragement and opening the door, especially when you're getting it in your shares. Okay, well, we've got this food. I don't really love this, but will the kids, mm-hmm. and kids sometimes will really surprise you, you know, yeah. what they will try.
Especially if you can kind of keep that slate clean and not,
yeah, exactly.
and not project on them, and they yep. just get yep. to pick it. It can be really surprising. And one of the studies shows that it's an exposure of 8 to 10 times for kids for tastes. And so it's just that repetition of exposure, and it can take a long time to develop a flavor and excitement for a certain taste. But if you're sticking with it and you're, and you know, that's part of this program, and we've talked about that sometimes, is like a CSA share the best deliverable for what we're trying to achieve. And for me, I believe it is, because it's a whole season of eating, and it's almost a year for most of our partnerships, and it's that regular scheduled influx of foods yeah. for people, but also that exposure. Then it's not just try this once and you're never going to see it again. It's that like regular delivery of that item, and then it's consistency, and people really start to plan their meals and their lives around that. And that's different than just for 3 months you're going to get enough to make a salad and then it kind right. of goes away. So, mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, when you're talking about helping expand people's palates, do you provide like recipes? I don't know if you have chard or kale.
We have
those
a lot of chard,
right?
Yes.
So, and I'm thinking, for some people, that's like, a friend of mine, he'd never heard of chard before. You know, he's in his like 40s and a really well worldly guy. And he's like, chard, what's chard? And I was like, oh my gosh, you know that? That's so interesting. But I'm thinking of like gateway recipes. Okay,
yes.
I've never had kale
yes.
before. Try this. Yep. Okay. And then, because I know, and I know this from teaching my classes, some people have grown up with vegetables only one way.
Yes.
And yep. they're just like, nope, I am never touching a Brussels sprout again, right? But then all of a sudden they'll have roasted Brussels sprouts because they were at somebody's dinner and they were like, oh, I accidentally ate one. And oh my God, yes. it was so good.
You like life changing. Yeah.
Well, right. Yes. I have eaten foods because my husband has cooked them way better than I've ever had them before. I'm like, oh, wait, I really do like this. I mean, you know, I've learned to love Brussels sprouts, something I never ate as a kid. And the first time I had them, they were horrible. They were too cooked and they were boiled.
Yeah. Mushy.
Nasty. And then I had them roasted. I'm like, oh, dude, these are awesome. You know, mm-hmm. So being able to include that,
yes.
that's awesome. Okay.
Yeah. So one of the pieces of this program that I am so grateful for the generosity of our farm partners, they donate an example share at each pickup. And so I get just a share to use as an example. And so I'm able to unpack that share, lay it out. I have a little setup and a table, and they're able to see individual items in that share, all the crops that they're getting. And so they can pick it up. We can look at it. We can talk about it. And then I also have recipes relevant to what's in the share that time. We go through it like crop by crop, item by item if they need. At this point, where March is our last pickup for the season, so some of them are like pros at this point. They tell me what's in there. They can go through and identify it, which is amazing and wonderful. But if they have questions, it's an opportunity to ask those. And then we actually have some recipe cards that are from the clinic. And so they can collect those. And then I also kind of supplement with additional healthy recipes that I find. Sometimes it's not even just that step-by-step recipe. It's just like, what are some ideas of how to make this? Is this something you would like eat raw? Is it something you would cook? Would you roast it? Would you put it in a soup? Kind of those general, like, how do you approach this food?
Yeah.
And then storage, you know, so like sometimes they're getting 12 items or 14 items in a box, and that's a lot. Like you have to be a passionate veggie eater to get through those in a couple days. And so we also talk about strategies, like what do you want to eat first before it spoils, so they're getting really the most mileage out of that share in terms of duration of food that they can eat. And then what are some items that they could wait a couple weeks if they needed it, or keep in storage, and so kind of make a plan about eating. As Leslie mentioned, often there's recipes that they have tried and loved that they are sharing with me or with each other. And I've made copies of patient-generated recipes and put those in the share. And I will ask if they have ideas about how to use it, or if they've used, in the winter, they get kind of some of the same items over each month. And so I'll ask like, hey, how did you use that celery root last time? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they'll either say like, oh, I haven't used it yet. And then I can help support them, or they'll share how they used it and if it was, you know, successful or not. So we do get to have that conversation each time. And for kids or spouses or partners that are not as interested in some vegetables, we definitely have tactics of like, how can you hide it in there? So you're still using it and exposing them, but it's not like, you know, just like four charred leaves center stage on the plate that are going to get pushed aside right away. So we do have some like tricks.
So it's a very dynamic pickup session. Yes. You're there when during their pickup times.
Yes.
Okay. Is there any other ideas or things that you've seen come through your patients or whatever, just to help in general of people eating more vegetables, or, you know what I mean? Just how can it, any tips that you have for the general person, how do they maybe eat a little bit healthier, if you have anything that you want to throw in there?
I think from a mental health perspective with that, I think small steps. You know, you don't have to take the whole box, or even if you're not in this program and working on eating healthier, you don't have to make this huge commitment to 100% eating only fruits and vegetables, or take small steps. Making just small steps, not setting yourself up for failure by overshooting. Mm-hmm. We humans, again, the condition of being human, we do that. We set ourselves up, you know, we try to like climb Mount Everest before we've like walked down the block.
Right.
And so I think applying that strategy to making changes in your health and your diet, small steps. What I can't do this, but what can I do? I like that approach with some of these changes as well.
That makes sense.
That's kind of maybe a general from the mental health perspective.
Yeah, no.
I think I'm guilty of that myself, of like,
human,
you know,
conditioning.
Oh, gosh,
shoot high and then missing, and then, you know, and then there's frustration about it. And so I really like that.
You fall off the wagon and then you don't get back on.
Exactly.
Instead of like saying, okay, I'm going to do this. And okay, well, I didn't succeed today. Let's hop back on tomorrow instead of going, I can't do this.
Yep, exactly. Because it is that human condition is, I didn't do it. Okay, I'm not going to.
Yeah.
But when we have smaller steps, the follow through is going to be a lot more achievable and sustaining. I think the program is awesome. I love that it's part of North Lakes. I love that Sarah's doing it because she does a really good job with it. She really believes in it, in the whole health of a person and how this contributes.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's great. I think we really do need help. We live in a weird world right now, right?
We
don't live in a place where, you know, I grew up, my mom cooked meals, we had a garden, and even then I ate vegetables probably most every meal, but still back then we didn't have as many vegetable options as we do now, right? Like, you didn't have all of these every day in the grocery store, most grocery stores, and now you might have them there, but then they might be ridiculously expensive or flavorless because of how far they've traveled.
Yeah.
But to be able to, in the summer, utilize the farms and the people who are doing this for all of us and being able to help people share in these options and, like you say, expand their palate and just get that nutrient rich in their bodies. You know, I mean, I've heard people who have done some of the research and basically saying, you know, so many of us, we eat and we eat and we eat, not necessarily, of course, because we're hungry, but our body is saying, I'm starving for nutrients. Right. Mm-hmm. But if my food is nutrient lacking, we still need, the body's still looking.
Yeah.
So then we eat and we end up eating either the wrong stuff or maybe a lot of, even some right stuff, but not so much nutrient rich. And if we can get some nutrient rich stuff from the farms who are doing a great job, and it's local, so it's fresh, the faster we can eat it, the more nutrients we're getting. Mm-hmm. And what a great thing, and people's bodies can respond. And like you say, mentally, I mean, we see things with schools. I was just talking to somebody yesterday about something they had seen about schools in Minneapolis who have switched over to farm fresh food, and not only how they, the kids love it, how their behavioral issues mm-hmm. have lessened and absolutely. Changed, and how grades have risen, and all these great wins. And then I know she was talking about that the schools were finding out that it was actually cheaper. It was actually cheaper to do this.
Oh, really?
Yes, they had to pay more staff for the processing, but they were finding out that it really ended up to be cheaper.
Wow.
To feed their... I know.
That is
very expensive. And I've heard that from other... Yeah. Like,
you know, when you're sourcing things locally and in season, you're... If you can do it with that, like, big overview, you can make some really, like, smart financial decisions. And then... You're paying the real cost of the food, right? There's like all those extrinsic costs of transporting food from California, and you know, that food is not, it's not, it doesn't actually cost what the price in the store demonstrates. And I think that's, you know, this program is not, without this program, many of our patients or clients probably wouldn't be able to just go out and pay for a full CSA share. Mm-hmm. Like, that's probably not realistic financially for them, but they've had this exposure, they've developed those tools and that education, and they may be able to, you know, go to the farmer's market occasionally and make choices that mm-hmm. support their health. They may be able to go to the grocery store or even to some of the convenience stores and make more strategic choices. And so that's, you know, kind of that more sustainable piece is learning that education. Even if the program went away, they still have that education, those tools to approach food.
Yeah, and exposure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or they get a job in the grocery store and look at all the things they don't know.
Right? And they're an expert.
Yeah, in some ways I'm wishing I was a child therapist, because I think that behavior piece is a little more evident. It is true with adults, but it can get so hidden with all this other stuff. Absolutely. That, you know, like you're saying, behavior is improved with better eating. It makes so much sense. If your body's really heightened on this processed sugar food, your anxiety's up, your impulsiveness, and then it crashes because that food can't sustain you, what does your behavior look like then? You're falling asleep, no energy, and you can see how that can have a ripple effect in kind of the opposite way we're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Sort of that tired yet discomfortable and restless as kids, where they just kind of are all over, even though they're kind of exhausted.
Yeah. So I was like, shoot, wish I were a kid there.
Well, I think like that broad idea of you can eat for brain health just as much as body health. Mm-hmm. Like, for so long we've talked about like your bones need calcium or your, mm-hmm. but your brain needs this like beautiful mix.
Absolutely.
Of nutrition. And, you know, even without the in-depth piece of that, just knowing that the food you're putting into your body, and in many ways makes up what your brain is, how it's capable of functioning well or unwell. And so I think nutrition supports that across all the ages. And if your brain's getting what it needs and your body's getting what it needs, it's much easier to make other wins in health.
Yeah, other healthy lifestyle choices and engagement.
Yeah. Right. Well, and you've got a little food security and real food security. Again, that's just one more piece to kind of take off your mental plate.
Very real. You know, thinking about mental health sometimes as the social problem of, you know, would there be mental health issues if there was, you know, stable housing and stable relationships and stable food and stable finances? And, you know, I would imagine a lot of mental health issues would decrease just from that alone. Mm-hmm. And so that's a component. Absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
So,
cool.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Cool. This is nice.
Yeah.
Can I just follow up on what Leslie was saying? Mm-hmm. So that, and you had spoke to hierarchy of needs. And so there's this, there's another way of looking at it called the social drivers of health.
Okay.
And we talk a lot about that in our work as an organization. And it's some of those components that Leslie just mentioned. It's that economic stability piece for our patients. And, you know, that has to do with employment and debt and bills and support. It's also that neighborhood and physical environment. And so, again, we are in these rural communities. And you think about, you know, I think there's this misconception out there of rural communities are bucolic and like we're all on farms and it's great and we're just, you know, riding our bikes from neighbor to neighbor, and it's not always like that. And particularly in the north, where, you know, our winters are long, economies are often smaller and struggle a little bit more. And so, you know, what are the housing aspects of that? What is transportation? What do our parks and green spaces look like, and how accessible are they to people? And then that idea of like where you live should not determine how healthy you are. Mm-hmm. But it does. And so that's a big piece of it. And then education. Do you even have access to the same education? What's your literacy like? What were your early childhood educational opportunities? Or what are you able to give that to your current children? And then food. What we've talked about, you know, hunger, like food security. Do you even have enough to eat regardless of the nutrition of that food? Mm-hmm. And then kind of that next phase of do you have access then to healthy options? And then there's that community and social context, which I think Leslie spoke to really nicely. That social integration, is there support system in the community? You know, are you facing a lot of discrimination, like because of your identity? And then the stress load that may be imparted from that. And then the healthcare system. You know, it's hard to be healthy in a system you can't access. And so, and then the quality of care, and then are those providers educated on meeting you where you're at, like culturally or linguistically? And so that's the social drivers of health. And so that's like this beautiful foundation that drives a lot of the work that we're trying to do as an organization. And so you can't go to the doctor and just be told like, okay, you got to eat better. Good luck. And like, you don't have a car to get there. You don't have enough money to buy the food. You don't have enough knowledge necessarily, like, because you just haven't been educated about the best or appropriate choices to support your wellness goals. You live alone, so it feels like fruitless to cook for one, you know, and so there's this cascading effect. And so if we can support a person on all those other levels, then they're able to make some bigger wellness and health wins. And then as an organization, part of our work of this program really connects to our mission, vision, and values. And so our mission is to respond to the healthcare needs of our communities with an integrated array of quality services and actively remove barriers to care. And of course, a barrier to care is not having nutrition and access to foods. The one that really resonates for me is our vision of having healthy, prosperous, engaged communities where everyone thrives. Mm. And thriving is different than surviving. Absolutely. Right? I know that's kind of like overused, but I think it's so true.
Yeah. It's a very important distinction.
Yeah.
Yes. And that, yes.
You know, it's like, I think sometimes this program just in the community gets labeled as like as just a, you know, a food program. And it is about getting people enough food to eat, but it is about that like preventative component and that education and that ability to thrive. Like, I'm not going to get you a box of 60 pounds of white rice and then like baking soda and, you know, cheese that doesn't have to be refrigerated and be like, good luck, make healthy meals for a month.
Right. Well, and I think it's true that there have been times, and there are still people, because I hear this reflected sometimes, of that attitude of, we gave you food. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter if you can use it. Doesn't matter if you can, here's a 10-pound bag of rice.
Right.
But is this something I can utilize? Is that something I can store? Do I even know how?
And do I have a stove to make the rice? And not that rice is bad, you know.
No,
not but villainizing rice, but, you know, if you can get a box of vegetables to go with those kind of random shelf-stable components,
right,
then you can make, like, real whole meals that have this deeper nutrition to them.
Right. That's a piece of the puzzle.
Right.
It is not the answer.
Right. And it's not that alone is not going to, you know, help create that sensation of wellness. And I like Leslie's use of vitality for a person that's, you know, there needs to be more robust options and choices for them.
One of the questions I was going to ask is so when you talked about access, so is there help for people getting their shares to their house if that is a
barrier? Yeah, so what we try to do is in a perfect scenario, the patient is able to come to the designated pickup day and time, which is always held in clinic. So they come to the clinic to pick up their share. The farm delivers it to the clinic, and then they see me or in a couple of our further locations. So again, now we're in 12 communities, and so I can't be in all of them. But we have some other wonderful staff that host these programs in some of those other communities. You know, in a perfect world, that patient can come when we're hosting the pickup because they get that real-life education or real-time education, mm-hmm. and then they get the resources. That doesn't work for everyone. And so we will either keep that share around, and we do have some capabilities of refrigerating that share or preserving it, you know, in the way it needs to be later in the day, or even holding it for a couple of days if that's their schedule. You know, we're flexible. We will help with connecting a different family member. Some people up here, especially our senior population, will have drivers or volunteers that they work with. Our resource coordinators, that role that I mentioned earlier, they really do the work of connecting patients. So if we know transportation can be an issue, then we can refer them to that resource coordinator, and then they can help come up with some creative solutions to matching that food to that person. Okay. We don't do a delivery model yet. So part of it is that, like, getting folks, if they are physically able to come out, you know, Leslie had mentioned those diseases of isolation, they're actually now been shown to be more detrimental to health than smoking, which is it's mind-blowing to think about that, you know?
Loneliness is a big thing.
It's huge. And in our rural communities, you know, we are spread out. We are some days in the winter, you know, there's 6 hours of daylight. And especially if you have physical limitations or age limitations or financial limitations, you can't put gas in your car to go see somebody. And you live 10 or 12 or 15 or 20, 30 miles from people that you would want to socially engage with. And that can be a real struggle.
Right. Sometimes the responsible thing is, like you say, I got to get to work, to home, or whatever, if that's even an option, and that's all the money I have for gas.
Right. And you know? So it's just any piece that we can add that connection layer to can also have profound impact on someone's life. We do some of our work in our clinics is recovery work, substance abuse recovery. And I know that's a huge piece. You know, that's not specifically what I work with, but I know that's a huge piece of the recovery puzzle, is just building those connections and
building,
you know,
new connections.
Yes. And as Leslie mentioned, like, helping people remember that they matter in so many different ways. And one of the reasons I love this work is because food is a way to show that you love, you know, and it's this great community gathering option, or it can be, mm-hmm. if you can share meals with somebody. It's just, you know, it's kind of that. It's the tool to inspiring that connection, but to me, it's one of the most accessible and easy ways to just instantly have community, is to sit down and share a meal with somebody, right. or to cook with them.
And healthy food. I mean, we a lot of times attribute love and food to sweets.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, it's like, here's a birthday cake. Here's that, you know.
I love you. Here's a cupcake.
Exactly. Yeah.
Definitely.
So let's talk about the real meat of the program, in the sense that you've kind of talked about that it's a pretty long share season. Mm-hmm. You're sharing recipes and tips and so really,
like, how does it work?
Yeah. And then talk about the other things that come with it.
Sure.
Too. So the education and what other things are, you know, and are there other equipment? Do you have like a steamer drive?
Right.
People bring steamer baskets. So people who are like,
no, yeah. But I love that idea. I'm going
to
steal it.
I've always wanted to do that. I've always wanted to have like steamers and kitchen tools and maybe, you know, good quality. And I remember the first time I got a good knife.
Yeah,
my,
it's like game changing, right?
Oh my God. I made so much food for a while. I was just chopping everything I get my hands on because I had a knife that was sharp enough to do it.
Tools and matter.
Or knife sharpie. You'd like, bring your knives in on Tuesday and sharpen your knives.
No, I love, you're full of wonderful ideas, dude. So
I'll just kind of go through the whole big picture and just jump in if you want more specifics about it.
Okay.
So Leslie kind of spoke about how a patient would get started. Again, it is open to anyone who is a patient of our clinic. And just for point of clarity, in the behavioral health model, they refer to their patients as clients. So you'll hear us say client or patient interchangeably. They have to be a patient of record with North Lakes Community Clinic. So any of our service line, that can be our medical, that can be behavioral health, that can be, we do speech therapy, occupational therapy, we have recovery systems. I'm sure I'm forgetting someone. We have dental. Dental is a big component of what we offer. And so any provider that works with a patient or staff member, if they know that patient well and think that they would be a good fit for the program, can introduce this program to them and say, here's this program. It seems like you might be a great fit for, you know, any of these reasons that I'm working with you on. And then the patient fills out that application. And then the provider, again, also recommends the patient. But on that application, there's questions about why the patient is interested in the program. And we do ask, do you have a financial barrier to purchasing enough fresh fruits and vegetables? And do you have access to basic kitchen equipment? So that's all on the application. So I'm able to gather a little background information. It also asks how often they cook from scratch at home, how many people are in their household or regularly eating with them. And so it gives me kind of a little snapshot of that patient before I reach out to them, also noting what they might need to be successful in the program before they're even started. So I received that application. And then in person for the first time when they start the program, we also sign an agreement. We do have a donation. So patients often pay a donation to be in the program. There's a lot of empowerment that comes with that. So they are really grateful usually, and they are really excited to get that share. And so they are really proud of the fact that they can kind of purchase that for themselves, as opposed to just like a food pickup. You know, there's a whole reciprocity that comes with that, that they're exchanging a little bit of their energy for what they're getting. If they cannot pay for the share, and we definitely have patients for whom that's true, and we have this kind of baseline donation amount, and it's a sliding scale. So when they meet with me privately, we determine what that is for them. And so it's really patient generated. They just tell me what they think is doable for them. That's able to change as the season goes on. You know, we have a lot of seasonal work in the rural communities, and so that might change throughout the year for that patient. If they can't contribute financially for their share, then we make another arrangement. So some of my patients, they'll make an agreement to mow their neighbor's lawn, or they'll make an agreement to share their veggie share with a neighbor, or make a meal out of it that they're going to share with a neighbor, or provide childcare, you know, so their neighbor can cook a meal. So they are still, that's still a contract that they sign, just as it would be if they were, say, I'm going to donate $5 a share. So, you know, we take that financial component out if it's not accessible for the patient. You know, we're trying to target patients that have a financial barrier.
Right.
And so we don't want that donation to be another barrier that would be self-defeating and silly. So we don't do that. And then they also set a wellness goal with me. That's just a patient-generated goal that they want to work on. We try to make it a SMART goal, you know, so an attainable, measurable goal. And it's a goal that they want to link to using the program. It doesn't have to be about nutrition. You know, some patients that might be dealing with mental health issues don't sleep well. And so their wellness goal is really focused around sleep. But then we can talk about maybe don't try to have dinner at 11 o'clock and then go to bed, you know, like maybe try to eat at like 5 or 6 and, you know, see if that helps. And kind of those strategies around nutrition that might support their other wellness goal. Some of my patients just have a goal, which I think is beautiful, of getting outside for 10 minutes a day. You know, I have some limited mobility patients that it's hard for them to go outside. And so, and just writing that down and knowing that there's somebody that's going to just check in. I just simply check in a couple times during the season and ask how that's going. That just adds a little accountability that they then maybe make actions towards that. I collect that information and then I enter it in a document in their electronic health record. And so their providers are able to look at that document and see that they met with me, that they're enrolled in the program, and that this is their wellness goal. You know, so if it's their medical doctor and they're working on managing diabetes and they set a wellness goal of having, you know, 20 minutes of physical activity 4 days a week, when they come in and meet with a nurse or the doctor to do, you know, a fasting glucose test, they can see that they might be working on that, and then they're able to have dialogue about that. So that's the patient end of things. And then when they come in, again, they get the full run through of the share, they get recipes, they get just support, they get that socialization. And when they initially sign up, they get a calendar for the year. So they know, that's something I go over in the introduction with them, is what the days are. That's always the same day of the week and the same time frame for their pickup throughout the season. And then
how long is the share?
Yeah, so it depends is the less satisfying answer. But it depends on what farm we're partnering with. So Currently we have 4 farm partners. We'll likely have 5 different farm partners. And they are local to the clinic. And usually it's a couple clinics. Like we have, you know, our clinics are close enough to that farm, a couple of them, that they will be the farm partner for multiple clinics. Those individual farms have different lengths of seasons.
Okay, right.
And so we partner with what makes sense for the farm, and then also what, you know, what I think makes sense for us in terms of frequency and amount of food that they're getting. Those farms vary in size and frequency of delivery. So most of the time what our patients are getting is a summer fall share that starts, you know, our summers don't start till late, right? I know, what a day to laugh about summer here. Our summers, I know it's a podcast, so you can't see my phone, but
it's very snowy outside, yes. People. It's very snowy.
It's March. They start those shares in June typically, and then it's usually an every other week type of delivery for our patients through the fall. And so usually like October, November, depending on, you know, that particular farm schedule.
Okay.
And then most of our farm partners also do a winter share option.
Okay.
And that's goes until March. So next week will be kind of wrapping up for this year. June through March, April is the typical season. In winter, for most of our farm partners, it's a once a month delivery.
Okay.
And, you know, partially that's because of what's available. Storage items, storage veggies that hold better in the longer months. So, you know, beets, winter squash, cabbage. We still got kale and a couple other greens. Our farm partners really try to utilize season extension to be able to be growing up in the North Country here. And so we get some of those little fresh treats, but the bulk of the items in the winter are those longer storage vegetables. However, our partners, our North Star partners in Hayward and Minong, they are an aquaponics growing.
Okay.
Structure, and so they are able to grow greens all year long. So if they're a patient at one of those clinics, they get more frequent greens through the winter. So they'll still be getting like head lettuce or salad mix, chard. I was giggling when you brought that up because chard regularly stars in some of those shares, and kale and that sort of thing, along with some of those more traditional winter root crops, but they're able to grow year long. And then because of that, they actually have an in-clinic farm market in our Hayward clinic. So during the CSA pickup time, they also are set up as a farmer's market. And so patients can shop at the market, staff can shop at the market, community members can shop at the market, because they have enough, you know, enough produce to kind of keep that up year round.
Nice.
Then they do that. And they've very generously done some fundraising in the last couple of years, and they're doing one right now for a brunch, and some of the proceeds of that, because they have a lovely on-farm cafe, go to fund a voucher program for us. And so we also are able to give out vouchers to patients that might be like in the waiting room that day, that they can then purchase things from the farm market.
Nice.
So that's like another piece of what we do.
Okay.
And that helps us open up or broaden the program. You know, the program originally started with a multi-year grant.
Okay.
And then that grant ran out, and our clinic and our providers and our leadership team just saw the great value in continuing this and making that commitment to
preventative wellness for our patients and that nutrition component. And so it's funded by the clinic now. And so it looks a little different than when it started because we have switched kind of that funding mechanism. Mm-hmm. The original grant was pretty sizable to help us get started. And so that had more, we were able to give patients tools like slow cookers and knives and cutting boards and that sort of thing. And so they got set up originally with some more equipment to help them be successful. But I think it's a huge commitment financially to keep that program going. But it does mean that we're not, you know, we have a limited amount of shares and patients that are able to participate each year. Mm-hmm. And so the farmers market is one way we're able to expand that. Most of our patients report that they are sharing their vegetables or their fruit that they're getting with four additional people. And so, you know, we're just slightly under 100 patients involved in this program this okay. year. This 2018 to 2019 are the growing year and the calendar year aren't exactly in sync. Then times four, that's 400 patients. And then in a perfect world, I'm able to host the pickup in a waiting room. And so even that can create those ripple effects that Leslie spoke about. You know, it might not be a patient getting the share that day, but they can come, they can see the example share, we can talk about healthy eating, they can take a recipe, they can learn about the program and, you know, if they're interested in applying for the next round. But it helps us kind of be able to share those resources with more patients when we're working on, you know, some limited funding for the actual vegetable share.
Okay. My additional question to that would be, are there other education opportunities to help people kind of really maximize, you know, like you said before, you were giving away, able to give tools and mm-hmm. things like that. Are there any classes that, you know, I'm thinking like knife skills and just yeah. some of those things are, you know, reminding people, well, if you don't have a knife to cut your char, just rip it off.
Right.
And tear it.
Yes, definitely. We definitely do a lot of okay. Supportive strategies of like, you know, Even if you have all the tools, sometimes you just don't want to wash another knife, you know, or you want the kids to be involved and tearing and ripping is just so much more fun. And the bonus is you get some of this physical movement back in your day, you know, especially if you have limited mobility. Sometimes just being able to have extra hand movements during the day is going to help your body's overall well-being. So we do really kind of use those low-tech strategies, and the recipes I choose are intentionally really budget friendly for the extra ingredients and then also pretty simple in preparation. I'm a big fan in having like cooking wins and feeling successful in cooking ties back to just simplicity. You know, like I'm kind of one of those, even though I'm giving out recipes, I rarely follow recipes. I think if you can give people just some basic techniques and ideas, right? Like you can make a soup out of anything. You can make a stir fry out of anything. You can, those strategies so that people don't feel like I need the step-by-step all the time. Those are great. Yes, and they're right. A great way to get started. And for some people that's going to feel way more comfortable, but, to not feel like you need 8 recipes every time you pick up your share of veggies. You can look at it and think like, I can make a soup, I can make a stir fry, and what goes into those things might be interchangeable.
Exactly.
That's kind of the educational environment that I try to convey for this program. And, you know, I think CSAs in general, that's one hurdle for people. Like even if you're not in this program and you're just a CSA member out in the world, or you're a passionate gardener or a farmer's market attendee, you are cooking. It's the reverse of what most of us are taught, is to find the recipe, decide what you want to cook, go buy the ingredients, go make the recipe. You're getting the ingredients first, and then you're thinking, what am I going to make out of these? And how am I going to kind of reverse engineer that recipe? And, you know, you don't always get like a clean pound of broccoli when you get your share.
Right, right.
I mean, it's still clean, but you're getting, you know, you might get like 2 pounds,
right.
You might get 3/4 pounds, and not to let that stop you from making the recipe, to still be able to improvise. And I think there's so much empowerment that comes from that too, is not being like daunted by what's in your share.
Right.
Knowing that like, even if it's an item you've never had before, you know, it's in the broccoli family, or you know, it's just a different type of winter squash, and you have this like winter squash soup recipe, and you know, like butternut squash is
everyone's favorite squash in the last couple of years. Like Bon Appetit's got all those recipes for it. But the truth is most of those recipes can be made with any winter squash. And so just helping people make those adjustments.
Yeah.
And then again, we just look at ways to promote and connect people with what's happening in the community. You know, like UW Extension has a lot of cooking skills and family cooking classes that are free and open to people. We have some, like Northland College has a really great kitchen space that they're developing different things to do with. So, you know, maybe we're not hosting those classes, but we're helping connect those resources.
Right.
But I really, I loved your steamer drive idea.
Like, I'm thinking, you know, my gosh, if there was an adult home ec class, like, or basic cooking, I would take that because I know there's stuff that I'm missing. And it is that whole, what do I need to know to just make a basic soup? Like, Michael Pollan even talks about this. If you just have these four ingredients, you can just start there. And anything else you put in is just, it's easy, whatever.
Yep,
it's
you fine. Can go from there. And but, you know it's going to taste good. You know, I mean, that's, it's kind of disappointing if you're new to this whole process and you've worked up the courage to try something outside of your regular routines and you've kind of harnessed that bravery and you're willing to experiment and you put this time and effort in. And it's not meeting, you know, your hopes. It's like a little disappointing. And then maybe you never try that again. Like maybe you never try to make a squash soup again because you had this disappointment. And so like, how can we support people in that education so they're going to feel successful? I mean, that education piece is huge, I think, for me. Yeah. And then once they get good, that is, you know, that's where it gets really exciting because they feel confident and then they are sharing it with their friends and their family. I have a family right now that the mom had just mentioned to me that they were thinking about quitting pretty early on in the program because they just didn't know what to do with these things. And I thought they're never going to get to the point where they can actually like eat these vegetables and use the share, you know, in most of its entirety. And now they're just like so confident and they're sharing what they do with me. And they have, you know, several children in the family. And so those kids are like helping to cook everything. And those are the really, you know, inspirational stories that just make it so exciting. And again, it is that kind of that low stress environment to be able to make those mistakes and to try things and not feel like you spent $50 on that dinner and it didn't turn out and you feel like you can keep trying and doing that. So,
right.
Yeah.
I love this. I think many people, doesn't matter your socioeconomic status, doesn't matter your educational level, getting healthy food in our bodies that is especially homemade is a challenge.
If you're
a working person, you know, and have a good paying job and kids, boom, you don't have time to get home and make food many times, or you're challenged with that. If you have four jobs because that's what you need to keep going to take care of your kids, you don't have time to. So figuring out how to add these things in because it is so important and it is how we stay healthy, and we need this. We know that we need this, and we don't get this information in schools and, you know, so much anymore. Kids don't, you know, you don't always grow up in a place where you have a parent that cooks or has the time,
sure,
you know.
Yeah.
So all of these things, getting this information into people and helping them start simple, you know, cooking can be really simple.
Yeah.
But you still have to have a place to start.
You do. And, you know, I have a patient who just has a microwave and they still are able to take this box of veggies and use it for the most part. And that to me is incredibly inspirational. I have pretty much too many kitchen tools at home and I don't always manage that. And so I think for me, it's just really getting that message across that it's to demystify it or just like emphasize that it can be really simple and still really good. And some of those techniques of, you know, batch cooking things and being able to freeze them if you have a freezer, or, you know, knowing what can sit out on your counter for a month before you get to it, even if you have really limited preservation space, like a refrigerator, that sort of thing. Or, you know, knowing that you can take just about anything and combine it to make a soup or a casserole, and that can go, you know, a really long way. And knowing kind of those food pairing those simple food pairing ideas, like that rice and maybe a legume or other protein that works for you. And then you can add in whatever vegetables you might have, or like the humble cabbage, which can, you can use half of it and it can sit in your refrigerator for another month. And, you know, it's still good usually if it's, if it's local and picked relatively recently. And so to me, it's just helping people integrate that into their day and know that, you know, we do, like, I am super guilty of this myself. We waste a lot of time during the day. Like, there's this perception that we don't have time, and it's not necessarily wasteful. We're just, like, if you really look at it, we're choosing to spend some of that time doing something else. And, you know, maybe that something else is more valuable to us, but to recognize that if you do have 15 minutes, you can still probably make a really good home-cooked meal for yourself. And, you know, a lot of times the pre-prepared meals do still take 10 or 15 minutes to throw together, so it's not that much different. But I think what this program tries to do, it, and one thing that I think is still a big challenge in our local spaces and just in our current culture, is to bridge that gap of access. And, you know, we, like, people know they have to eat healthier, they should eat healthier, but they just cannot access that food. And so what, you know, what are different ways we can do to kind of bridge that gap and help get that healthy food to people, to all people? Like, everybody deserves health, really. Everyone that should, that's a basic human right. And so how can we help align as many people from all socioeconomic statuses with just those, like, really fundamental healthy items? Right. And I think that's a big question. I don't know, you know, I'm open to
how do we do that?
Right.
Yeah. We live in this amazingly wealthy country where all this amazing healthcare knowledge, and yet we've got these massive disparities that some people in other countries look at and go, oh, we don't get you Americans. What are you doing over there?
Right.
You
know? Our systems are not always favorable for equity, but, you know, I think even just bringing that question to the table can help in so many realms looking at that. And it's interesting up here. We're so blessed to have really wonderful resources and to have amazing farms, and then for those farms to stay viable, they need to have eaters, and they need to have eaters that can, you know, afford to buy their food. And so, like, all those systems need to be in place for community members to be healthy, and then to financially keep up the health of those small farms so that they're there to grow the nutritious and nutrient dense food. So it's a whole, you know, it's a whole systems question. But,
well, and the farms want to support their community.
Yeah,
I mean, I know
they are the community,
right?
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I know we went on one of your farm tours years ago, and the farmers were very much, they were like, how do we keep it here?
Yeah.
They want to be local.
They want to feed their neighbors.
Right.
Yeah.
And they want to, you know, we've worked really hard at growing these vegetables. Let's keep all the nutrients in the county too, you know?
Right.
So, and I think that's fantastic. I love your guys' holistic approach. I think it's so important. And I think, honestly, really the work that you do in the education, you could go so much farther to help other people who don't really have an access issue, but just need those little tools and steps and all of that. So,
yeah, definitely.
So, yay. anything else I'm forgetting or that you want to share about the program? Any like tips that you've seen come by, or just wins that you've seen for people who really, you know, just any average person could grab on to?
Yeah, I think it's just that, you know, it comes back to that piece about if there's a way to take the stress out of it for you, if there's, you know, if there's a financial stress component, you know, to be connected to programs that ease that for you. If it's just the stress of trying new things, cut yourself some slack. I think, you know, I among lots of people we're incredibly hard on ourselves, and to just have fun with your food. And I think there's so much for a lot of people too. There's so much nutrition information out there that it can be overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like Leslie said, keep it simple. There's lots of schools of thought on what the best diet is, or, you know, what you should be adding or what you shouldn't be adding. And Michael Pollan's a great advocate of, you know, just if you can keep it simple and keep it whole and keep it local. And typically, if you're able to have some education and support around what's in season, it's usually financially fairly doable for most people at that price point, and
to just be able to experiment a little bit. Like, not everything's going to be a win. I have made some terrible things in my day, for sure. But just to keep experimenting till you find the dishes that work for you, the foods that work for you, and you don't have to love and eat everything. You know, like, you can just add some things in that feel successful for you or your family, and to just remember that, like, joy of eating with somebody, or even eating, dining with yourself for something mm-hmm. that you've, like, lovingly prepared for yourself. I think, you know, I'm not a behavioral health therapist, but I think food can be an incredible self-care tool. And I think, again, not necessarily in this particular realm of community health, but just in the wider societal view, it's like self-care is, you know, getting a massage or, like, going to brunch, and that can be self-care, but also self-care is, like, taking care of yourself. And I think when you take the time to cook for yourself or to prepare a meal that might not actually be cooked, that's, like, a great act of self-love. And if you start there, you can make some other gains.
Bring yourself to a candlelight dinner if yeah. it's you and a TV tray.
Right, exactly. Or, you know, if you have 5 minutes and it's, like, just putting it on a plate before you run out the door and making, like, a slightly healthier choice. I think we feel like we have to do all the things and eat all the things and be all the things. And, you know, if you can, like, slap an avocado on your right. breakfast tray, then you've made an important choice for yourself. And I think when we are as healthy as we can be, and I think as we can be is important in that, we don't, you know, that access and equality part is huge. And so we're all maybe entering this at different levels, but if we can be as healthy as we can be, then we can help our communities and our neighbors be as healthy as they can be. And that's huge. That's part of our work as North Lakes Community Health Center, is to have enough and be well enough to give back. And when we have that critical mass of people that are healthy enough to do that and be that, then I think our communities can flourish, and it just goes on and on from there.
If you want to learn more about North Lakes Community Clinic, you can check them out at northlakesclinic.org. And we wanted to give a shout out to their farm partners as well, the people that help make this all possible. There's Hermit Creek Farm, which is in Highbridge, Wisconsin. North Star Homestead Farms in Hayward, Wisconsin. And then Sweet Top Farm in Deer Park, Wisconsin. And Sarah says they're actually working with one or two more at this point in time to get them on board as well. I did chat with Sarah about community meals. In our conversation, she talked about sort of the power of food to unite us and level the playing field, and that community meals can be a great place to share experiences and foster communication and connection. And North Lakes Clinic doesn't sponsor a community meal at this point. However, she does direct people to the Shawamigan Co-op in Ashland. They have a Wednesday night $5 community meal, and I'm going to share that link on the website in show notes as well. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Thank you so much for listening. Please check out the other podcasts at wellnessrenpodcast.com. Many other topics you can listen to on food and mind and how we operate in the world, big things, little things, prevention, and helping us stay or get back on track. Thank you so much for supporting the podcast. Please consider sharing the podcast or the episodes with folks that you think might enjoy or benefit them. Share on Facebook. Feel free to share the email if you're on the email list. If you're not, love to have you join us. We just send out a quick email when we have a new episode. You can find that on the wellnessrenpodcast.com site on the left side. If you are an Amazon shopper, please think of us when you make your Amazon purchases. Going to the wellnessrenpodcast.com website first. Click on support the podcast, and then you can walk into Amazon that way. And that way your purchase, a little tiny portion, no cost to you, will go to support the podcast. Thank you very much to those who participate. We really do appreciate it. And if you are able and interested in supporting the work that I'm doing and to help us keep it going, please consider becoming a financial supporter by becoming a Patreon member. And you can do that by going to the left of the website. There's a big red button that says Become a Patron. And for as little as a dollar a month, you can support the work that we're doing here. And honestly, that support means so much, no matter what level you're supporting us at. So thank you, thank you, thank you. We really do appreciate it. Have a wonderful week, and may you continue to find the pieces that fit into your health and wellness puzzle. Until next time, take care.